I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the NPR affiliate studios, KCBX in San Luis Obispo, California. Come along and join me for a fascinating conversation with Berkeley-based author Yang Huang. Yang grew up in Yangzhou, China. She was a university student in Shanghai when the Tiananmen Square student protests and riot erupted in 1989. As a result, she and her friends' lives were forever transformed. As an undergraduate, she came to the U.S. to study computer science. Yang attended Boston College and subsequently earned an MFA from the University of Arizona. She subsequently started working as a software engineer and simultaneously studied literature while pursuing her writing career. Today, Yang lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and works for the University of California at Berkeley. In addition to her day job and family life, Yang says she writes fiction to create a more tolerant and helpful world through her stories. Come along and join Yang Huang. Yang Huang?
Yes.
An author, and you live in Berkeley, California.
Very near Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you work for UC Berkeley.
Yes,
yeah.
For almost 20 years.
Oh, wow. You were born and raised in China, right?
Yes, Jiangsu province.
But then you went to university? Nanjing?
Or? In Shanghai.
Shanghai,
okay. I went to Tongji University.
Your stories, they're fiction, but they're based on reality. They're based on your life journey.
You could say it's a lived experiences.
Uh-huh.
Not all of them based on my own life. It's based on the people I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some of the more fascinating, intriguing yeah. people, you wove them in. Let's start with Living Treasures.
Mm-hmm.
I love that story.
Thank you for reading my books.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you how much this means to
me.
I'm ready. I loved your shows.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm ready to reread them because they're just so packed with nuances of life in China.
Mm-hmm.
And especially going back in time, your post-cultural revolution and your Tiananmen Square
mm-hmm.
period of time, which was explosive for young people growing up in China. Tell us about your time and place there growing up and how that formed you and made mm-hmm. you who you are.
Yeah, I actually grew up the tail end of the Cultural Revolution, so we saw the trauma the nation had gone through. And I remember this fear of Mao Zedong.
Uh-huh.
In his passing, we felt like the sky has fallen,
mm-hmm.
Literally. Sometimes, even as a young child, I couldn't even read. I was illiterate until I was 7. But I remember when I had nightmare, I will actually call out for, you know,
mm-hmm.
Mao Zedong, you know, long live Mao Zedong, even after he passed. So this was, indelible on the entire nation.
Yeah. Well, one of the most profound elements was the Red Guard.
Yeah.
And how people just went crazy and destroyed their own culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I've talked to people who were Little Red Guards and whatnot.
Oh.
And there's just this, it's hard to explain, but just this disconnect from reality
mm-hmm.
that people went through. And then kind of an embarrassment. And
did feel embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming back a little, that type of.
That's what I was going to ask you
fervor.
About. You know, I think of Hong Kong.
Yes.
And what happened there. And I go, oh, my God, you know, shades of what happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that cloud didn't really go away
mm-hmm.
because the political system was not reformed. That's why we had this movement in 1989. We want to.
And you were a university student?
Yes,
then?
I was a freshman.
In Shanghai?
Yes. Yeah, at Tongji University. So
mm-hmm.
I.
So you had a lot of friends that were protesters who
yes.
risked their lives.
Yes. There's a young man who took part in the hunger strike for 3 days. And after the crackdown, he just withdrew from the university. I actually lost in touch with him. Sometimes I wonder how he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very sad. we had a lot of students travel to Beijing before the crackdown. And those, it was so sudden, the crackdown.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about the rising up of the students? That seemed pretty quick, too.
Yes, yes. Because the nation was ready for it. Mm-hmm. There was just so much pent-up fervor and energy and, you know, to reform. And had the support of the entire nation. Mm-hmm. In no time, the working class was mobilized. It was just such an emotional time.
Yeah. Well, it's complex, too, because, for example, your parents came of age in the height of the Cultural Revolution.
Exactly.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And I have a friend that was a Western-trained physician from Shanghai. And her husband was a radiologist there at the top hospital. And they were forced to go back and learn medicine from barefoot doctors.
Yeah.
After going to a med school in London. You know, it's like, wow.
Wow,
so
yeah.
A lot of disconnects.
Looking back, it seemed like it almost impossible. It was like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But it's also scary to see that kind of craziness is coming back in this day of age.
Do you have an explanation at all for it, or is it illogical? What's happening today and why?
Because this was never resolved. Mm-hmm. They never apologized. If they apologize for the crackdown and they say students were trying to take the country to a more progressive direction,
right,
even though we couldn't get there like in this year or next year or even decade, we should, you know, steadily head toward that direction. If there's that kind of explanation or, you know, stance, I think we would not have gone down this same dark road.
Right, right.
Because they just didn't learn the lesson and they didn't admit, you know, the huge mistake was made.
Yeah. When you get back to your parents, and this is where fiction gets confusing, because fiction is based on reality, as you alluded to. So it's hard for me, I'm guessing, you know, trying to read into your story.
Uh-huh.
You know, practically in Living Treasures, you have a mom and a dad who came of age during the Cultural Revolution. Mm-hmm. Was that the same metaphor for your mom and dad?
Now you mention it, yeah, I guess. Uh-huh. We're the same generation.
Uh-huh.
And my dad, he said...
And was he a professor?
He eventually became a professor, but... During the Cultural Revolution, he was exiled to Jiangsu province. That's where he met my mom. Otherwise, they might not have met.
Interesting. So they were forced to work in a farm, in a collective? Or?
My father was forced to work in a shipyard.
Oh, wow.
His major was psychology.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he just became a worker. It's... Everybody, young people were exiled.
Yeah.
He picked up a lot of like manual technical engineering work. Mm-hmm. Like he built his own television.
Wow.
In the 70s. It was so funny that because he used those diagrams and he had those parts, he just put them together. And the image was upside down.
Oh, jeez.
So you had to, like, turn your head sideways, and they drift. They were, like, dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, you know, the entire neighborhood came to watch the television upside down.
And that's another thing you reference in your books about the kids and families watching television.
Yeah.
And more than once you reference American shows.
Yes. In the 80s, there were growing pains.
Right, yeah.
We just thought it was so cool. And Dynasty. Yeah, we kept up with popular music as well.
Mm-hmm. I know more than one person. That's how they learned English, was watching television.
Yeah. Even after I came to the States, I learned English by watching music videos.
Uh-huh.
To me, it was like poetry. I kept a closed caption on. And that was a shortcut.
That's really great. Dig a little deeper on the first book, Living Treasures.
Mm-hmm.
You have a family in there. You talk to us about the characters and what happens and why you wanted to write this book and share the story.
I have always wanted to write about the student movement because it profoundly changed all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It just never left me. But it's very hard to tell that story without just go for the big story, you know. you just want to go through the crackdown.
Right.
But it's the little things that really changed the entire nation that never went away. And I want to tell that story.
One of the things you allude to is the one-child policy.
Yes.
And I did not know until you mentioned that Mao Zedong, that he was not a strong advocate for the one-child policy.
Did I mention that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they changed their mind about it. Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So initially they were...
He wanted more.
Yeah, big
more
families.
People. Yeah.
They rewarded those mothers. They were called glorious mothers.
Uh-huh.
And the state gave them subsidies for raising big families.
Uh-huh.
And then he was, the economist said, you know, there really should be family planning policy.
Mm-hmm.
But because Mao Zedong really advocate for big families, and it just messed up the family planning could have worked.
Yeah. Well, and again, if you jump forward mm-hmm. to the last 5-10 years, the one-child policy has backfired on the Chinese economy.
Exactly.
Because now there's a shortage of workers who are still of working age.
Yes. I think this is a problem with China. The policy swings left and right and left and right.
Yeah.
It just never stay in a sensible, logical way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why currently they're saying that if the chairman or the emperor, really, don't do anything, the country would have been just fine. You would have done great. And it would be prosperous. It's
yeah.
only because this dictator really wants to make the nation that he thinks is going to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's causing so many problems.
Yeah.
And they never could correct it because it just swing left and right. And
well, and again, going back pre-World War II and World War II and post, you have the Kuomintang,
mm-hmm.
who were their own worst enemies in so many ways.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the coin, you have Mao Zedong.
Mm.
And he's a natural reaction to the Kuomintang and what their abusive policies.
Yes.
You know, so at that time and place, you can totally understand why and how Mao Zedong became popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you old enough to know friends who were Little Red Guards, or were they kind of a generation before you?
I think that by the time I came of age, those people were hiding now.
You yeah.
know,
yeah.
they did not want to admit
yeah.
what they did,
because
mm-hmm. You know, they felt some kind of remorse, and you know, it was stupid.
Well, let's do a synopsis, mm-hmm. an overview of the high points of Living Treasures, the storyline, and what you were communicating.
It's a story about a young law student. Her name's Gu Bao.
And is she based on somebody we know?
I think it's based on a lot of people I know,
but
they
not,
didn't...
not you?
Personality
traits?
Some of her personality traits, it's... yeah, she's like a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think parts of it must be me, you know? Because the writer really... all the characters is a writer, you know, when she's working on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to become all of them. And sometimes I couldn't distinguish the reality from imagination,
yeah, yeah.
Because you're so deep into it.
Yeah,
and the imagined things seemed more real, and it was real for me.
And how about her husband? Was he, again, kind of a composite?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a composite. He definitely, you know, has some quality of my husband. But of course, my husband was never a soldier. He didn't do...
How about you? That was a curious question. Did you have to serve at all in the army?
We did the military training.
Right.
It was mandatory.
So it was like one semester or 1 year? Or?
1 month for
okay.
us.
Okay. So you were in uniform?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. We shot guns. We shot rifles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we did all this military training. And yeah... A lot of young female students, they admire those young soldiers.
I have a lot of friends who are Chinese who live in America,
mm-hmm.
and they just, for some reason, they just admire an American soldier in uniform. They just have an affinity mm-hmm. for that. I find really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And obviously there were other ethnic groups, right?
Yeah.
They just admired soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I spent time in Outer Mongolia,
And
there's a whole cultural dynamic there that, you know, you have the Han people and then the peripheral people.
Minorities.
Yeah. Back to Living Treasures. Again, talk to us about what happens in this story, the high points.
So she fell in love with this young soldier she met during the military training. And they got into trouble pretty quickly. To protect her reputation and prevent her from dropping out of school, her mother shipped her off to the countryside to have a secret abortion. There she meets a young country woman who's hiding from one child policy workers because she had a second pregnancy that will bring on the wrath and they will force her to have abortion. And Gu Bao was not very discreet about that friendship. She's, you know, she's very excited because she's going through her own healing process from the abortion. She inadvertently brought one child policy worker to her hiding place, and this caused...
What was his name again?
Charles Du. It was a nickname.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But he sounded pretty evil in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
A moment about the abortion doctor, because he was a victim of the Cultural Revolution too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why he wasn't a licensed MD. The doctor
performed the surgery.
Yes.
Yes. There were a lot of these doctors. Like you mentioned, the barefoot doctors who had MD licenses overseas.
Yeah.
But this... So he's from a medical family, you know, and he's doing great work, but he was exiled to this mountain village to do this menial labor. But he actually saved a lot of women's lives, possibly. Mm-hmm. So he made this unbearable job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he took care of those women in very difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I just really respect a lot of Chinese people. They just make the best of impossible conditions.
Yeah. I think they call it being stoic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And resilient.
Mm-hmm.
But your heart goes out to them. That,
yeah.
You know. Including journalists.
Mm-hmm.
I really have so much admiration for Chinese journalists, you know, back then and now. They're doing brave, impossible work under the censorship.
And knowing they could be arrested any day.
Yes, and some of them have been.
Mm-hmm.
And they still continue to speak out.
Yeah.
The country should be so grateful to them, even though, you know, their voices are silenced. And, yeah, it's a lot of, they brought a lot of danger on them.
How cool. So. Well, okay, only because of time.
Okay.
Let's move on to My Good Son.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that a metaphor for you in your life?
In a lot of ways.
You have children?
Yes. Yes. But this book was not written with them in mind. I initially conceived this story when I saw a strange image. You know, a tailor spends his entire life making clothes for other people.
Mm-hmm.
One day he puts on a long form-fitting dress and walks in heels. So I thought, that is so odd. Does he want to be a woman or is he driven by something else?
Right.
Because he's a man wearing a dress and walking heels, so I thought this must be a gay character. Yeah, initially I tried to make Mr. Tai gay, but the story doesn't work. I finally figured out it needs to be outsider. So I brought in Jude, American gay man, to have this journey with this family. I think the most personal part is a father-son relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I have a father. He was very strict on my brother. My brother was naughty. But this father's not my father, and this son's not my brother.
Right, right. Different personality.
Yeah, different personality. But the dynamic is kind of similar. So I guess...
So as a father, they were similar. Mm-hmm. In how they parented?
In terms of strictness.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. How he wants to impose his will on the son.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is different as well. But, you know, yeah. I guess I follow... I got this energy to pursue this story because I had that in my childhood, watching how my father was struggling with my brother. So I wanted to tell this father-son story. I think, you know.
And you added the character from Austin, Texas, with his mom and dad.
Yes.
So where did that come from? Why did you decide to inject that as the homosexual foundation?
I had gay friends. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to know about other people, other groups who I'm not part of. Mm-hmm. So I just had deep affection and respect for the character. I don't really know. This is part of the reason I write fiction. I want to get to know them.
So you're exploring yourself.
Exploring myself and explore other groups that, you know, we're inevitably part of their, even though they're not us, we share some common things. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell what it was, really. It's a mystery, it's a curiosity, and I just have this affection for these people that I don't know, and I want to know them. And I did so much research about this group, and I continue to, you know, love and support them. I just think they're fascinating people. They're talented, and Judy's very talented. Yeah.
Fascinating.
They're very kind, you know, but they all have their quirks.
Yep.
They're not always nice.
Because they're human.
Like all of us.
Human beings, yeah.
Yeah.
The fatal flaw. Let's talk about, I guess you call it an anthology or collected short stories.
Linked story collection.
Yeah. That's a national award winner, right?
Yeah, I won awards for all these books, but that one won the Juniper Prize in fiction.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
The story where the protagonist, the woman, is a grown woman, is there metaphors for you in that character?
There are five protagonists in that collection.
Right.
A father, mother, a son, and two daughters.
But the mother in it, is that you? Are there shades of you, or is it more shades of your mother?
I think it's more shades of my mother.
Okay.
It's about my growing up in that family. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of age, I think. You know, yeah, it's my mother. She's my mother's age. She's kind of like my mother. But I think all these people, they're probably a little bit gentler than real people. Because I think fiction is a bit gentler than reality. In fiction, like, parents were changed. They were, you know, people have more capacity to grow than real people. So all these stories actually initially possibly came from my family and my neighbors. A lot of my neighbors in them.
And how about the story where the younger woman who's working high tech in, I think, North Carolina flies back to visit with an old boyfriend?
Right.
And that's a very fascinating journey.
Yes. This younger daughter, she has an Indian boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Her family has never seen an Indian their entire life.
And he came meet the parents, right?
Yeah.
And cooked for them.
Yes.
How does that dovetail back to you in your life and how you decided to create these characters? There has to be something that resonates with your life experience.
Yeah, I was an engineer, but I didn't go to North Carolina. In order to write fiction, sometimes I have to make those people different from me.
Right.
And like one easy way, shortcut, is to just move the location. Mm-hmm. That book was set in Nanjing, but I grew up in Yangzhou. That's a city 4 hours away by bus. When I was writing about Yangzhou, I just couldn't. I was so confined by my own experiences. So I decided to move the location away to a place that I've only been a few times. Mm-hmm. That kind of freed up my imagination. I was able to do more with them. Mm-hmm. They become not like me. But essentially, you know, they're obviously, because you can get to know them, they're always part of you, all of the characters.
And there was the mountains near Chengdu?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Near the pandas.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I researched about that. So I was like that engineer working in the U.S., but my boyfriend was Chinese. Mm-hmm. But I had those a lot of Indian colleagues. Like I said, I'm always fascinated with other groups of people. Mm-hmm. I imagine I just give her a bigger challenge to bring back a brown man to meet the parents. Yeah. And she doesn't, at the time, she does not, they were not dating. And ostentatiously, he went back to visit her because they were friends. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the story, he was, you know, the parents grew to like him. Yeah. And so I...
But is there any connection with your life in real, your parents and whatnot, and the Indian person?
No.
No, it's just kind of composite.
It's just not... I never brought the Indian boyfriend yeah. back. No, yeah. That story is just a story. Mm-hmm. It's a story I want to read. You know, yeah.
That's really cool.
And I love my colleagues, so...
So let's roll back in time in your life. And when did you first think about emigrating to America, and what motivated you? Why did you want to do that?
I think at the time, it was economic opportunity mm-hmm. and, you know, and educational opportunity. And because women were treated unfairly in China. And
Do you feel that's not true today?
It is still true.
Yeah, okay.
It is still true. But economically, China has, you know, raised the living standard a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, middle-class people, they don't have to study abroad to mm-hmm. have, you know, a middle-class life anymore. But in terms of opportunity and equal opportunity for women, I think it's still true overseas.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And
so that becomes a stimulus.
Yeah.
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 You alluded to the rise in quality of living in China.
Yeah.
When I first went there, mm-hmm. in Shanghai and whatnot, people I met talked about someday wishing they could have air conditioning or right. someday wishing they could have a car.
Okay.
And the last time, I think it was in Chengdu, people had two cars.
Yeah.
You know, and they had all these amenities that mm-hmm. 30 years ago a Chinese couple could only dream of having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though cars was not necessarily a good thing, but at least they're having a lot of electric cars now.
Mm-hmm.
So the air quality is improving because
of
that.
Oh, good. Is that markedly so? When you're like in Beijing and whatnot, do you notice that the air is clearer?
I heard about it.
Okay.
I haven't gone back in recent years.
Because I was there just before the Olympics.
Okay.
And it was so awful.
Right.
We'd open the hotel window and then close it really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they did the man-made rain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But during the Olympics, you were probably not there at the time.
No, it was just before.
Okay.
But they were shutting down factories and whatnot to try and clean up the air.
Yes. And it really has worked, you know, to a great extent.
Only because of time. Let's jump back. So you're in China and you decide you want to come to America.
Mm-hmm.
What was the process and how hard was it to get a visa?
It was very difficult at the time. But then the Tiananmen Square protests mm-hmm. happened and the crackdown happened. So there was a swift change of attitude from the international community at the time. When I was applying to study abroad and they had so much sympathy for Chinese students, I got my visa, you know, relatively easily.
And you were still an undergraduate?
Yes.
And where did you go to school when you came to America?
I went to Florida Atlantic University to study computer science.
Oh, wow.
I was a physics major in China,
uh-huh.
but I heard it's difficult to look for a job with a science degree. And
yeah, you were mentioning in one of your books about depending on your major made a big difference on how hard it was to get a visa.
Yeah.
Or easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. What is closest to your heart? What are you about your books?
Uh-huh.
You know, what would you like to share?
Oh, it's kind of hard because you ask me to, you know, choose a favorite baby.
I know.
I think they're all close to my heart in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Living Treasures is about a student whose experience echoed a lot of my college days,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't do the risky things she did. And My Good Son is about this father-son relationship that was very personal to me. even though they are not my family members. And my old faithful, especially about my growing up in this kind of almost typical of Chinese family, middle class family at the time. Yeah, that was, you know, I love this family. That's how this book came about. And I will have a new novel titled Oasis.
That you're working on right now.
Actually, I found a publisher.
Oh, wow.
You won the inaugural Kai Emmons Award. It will be published by Rentham Press in spring 2027.
Wow.
And that book took the longest to write, over a decade. Right now, I think that book is closest to my heart. I give so much of myself to the characters, even though, you know, the heroine's not me. She grew up in Gansu province in the desert, in an oasis, you know, in the desert.
Literally an oasis, yeah.
Yes, literal oasis. It's a love story in climate fiction. And I felt that story is very dear to my heart. But I love all these people. I've lived with them and...
So they're a part of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And after you spend so much time with them, and you couldn't tell which part you made up.
Right.
It felt very real.
That's really cool.
Yeah. They all
so you probably learned a lot about yourself in that process.
I have.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, yeah.
And is your mom and dad, are they still alive?
My father passed away. My mother's still, yeah, she lives in Berkeley.
Oh, wow. Cool. You're really blessed to have her there.
I am.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
You can visit my website, yanghuang.com. That's my name, yanghuang.com.
And you could order the books through that portal on your website?
There are links. You can order from your favorite local bookstore.
When is Yang's movie coming out? Do you ever think about that?
I hope so someday. Yeah, it's hard.
Okay, between Living Treasures and My Good Son, which would be your first choice to turn into a movie?
I think it's easier to turn My Good Son into a movie, but Living Treasures will be so cinematic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has great story.
Yeah. All right. Yang, thank you so much. This
thank
has been
so,
been
so
great.
Much, Tom.
So we'll have to do part two coming up.
I would love to.
Okay. Yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the KCPX studios in San Luis Obispo.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.